OTB's Mount Rushmore. 32 counties, one county representative choosing their sporting Mount Rushmore. Some decisions are easy.
I mean, it takes 2.5 days to read Johnny Mutter's Wikipedia. It goes on and on and on.
Others are controversial.
A colossus of a man. But should he go up on the side of a mountain? No, Tommy, no. I cannot have Graham Geraghty.
Join the debate across all our social channels at Off the Ball.
It's very, very special, believe me. And you can say it's grand. It's not grand if you're not on it, though. Fortunately, inside me, that's ultra competitive and I need to be there.
And catch the live decision-making over the next few months on OTB AM, live every weekday at 7.30 a.m. on OTB Sports Radio.
Keith, the good people at World Rugby once deigned to make you the World Rugby Player of the Year, but what if your own people don't put you on their sporting Mount Rushmore?
I know. Thank God I'm not picking the four anyway, that's for certain. And would I be upset? Do you know what? I'd get over it. But I've loved listening to this for the last few weeks, actually, and listening to the guys that have been left in and left out. It's kind of entertaining. And you know what? That little clip with Ron Nogara saying, yeah, we're all competitive. You're dead right, we're all competitive. You know, there's no way around that fact at all. It's kind of what made sports people in the first place.
Exactly. I'm going to breach a lot of confidences here, but I'm fairly sure that Ron Nogara was lobbying from before the actual day itself. So I don't know if you've been in touch with Cill O'Connor and James O'Connor. I just want to, if you want to confess to it, that's fine. It appears as if that is the done thing.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I won't do that, though I do love Jamesy and everything he stands for. But no, I haven't been in contact whatsoever.
Is Clare?
I'd have a little bit of association with them, but that's about it.
Is Clare exclusively hurling county, or it's not really? What kind of sporting county was it for you to grow up in?
I think it was a hurling county. We had rugby, and we'll talk about that in a while. But for me, it was growing up in Killaloe. The first game I played, you watched anything on telly and you played whatever was on the telly. You know, there wasn't much on the telly. We only had the one channel, really. But you wanted to get out onto the hurling field, which was about 250 yards from my house. And it was just hurling, 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 hurling. Now, it's funny, it's different to what kids do now, which is they do a huge amount of training. We did seem to do a huge amount of matches, and we played all the age levels. It didn't matter what age you were. You played about 6 years up anyway, because we were a small village and Smith O'Brien's was a small club. But it was pure, unadulterated hurling. And actually, we grew up with the idea that we hadn't won for years, so we were bitter. And there was that sense of, could it be our year? And it just didn't happen time after time after time. So our hearts were broken by hurling from a Clare perspective. But from a club perspective, we wouldn't have been a top-notch hurling club. We would have been intermediate at our senior level, and we would have been B, not A, in the championship in under 12s, 14s, 16s. But I loved it. And I have to still say, to this day, it's my favourite sport to have played in terms of the skill that was required. There's a kind of madness and a joy to hurling that it's a crazy game, you know, and we played with no helmets. Our helmets were only just coming in, but there were absolutely no face masks. And, you know, there was a touch of madness to it. And actually, when you start looking at some of the players that would go on Clare's Mount Rushmore, you're looking at a touch of madness as well.
That, absolutely. Was Loughnane then the kind of... Because it's impossible for me to remember what it would have been like to watch Loughnane hurl on Clare teams that were good but not great, or not good enough to get over the great teams that they were coming up against. Was he a totemic figure as a player as well as a manager?
He was, long before he was a manager, obviously. Himself and Sean Stack were the two players that I seem to dredge out of my memory from the 70s and early 80s, that they were the players that were you know, getting all-stars but on teams that weren't winning anything and were valiantly driving and driving and driving. And look, when I mentioned bitterness, I think it was an element of that bitterness for those players that when they retired from playing, they brought that drive on to the next generation as well. And so there are the memories I have from it, actually, are valiantly losing, which is not a nice place to be.
Are you from Killaloe? Is that where your dad is from?
My dad was from Limerick. I was born in Ardna Croshia. I was born in Limerick, like most Clare people, but we lived on a farm in Ardna Croshia in Clare, and we moved to Killaloe when I was one.
Right.
So I know I'm a Killaloe man, and I'm definitely a Clare man. So Limerick Leader used to have a bit of a bitch and a moan about me at one stage that I had that I'd abandoned Limerick, but no, I was a Clare man. So,
but your dad would have been, because I'm trying to establish what level of rugby there was in Clare. Your dad obviously played for the Lions, but he's a Limerick man.
Yeah, he was a Limerick man. Brendan Foley is a Limerick man, and we ended up having a couple of internationals, a few internationals from Killaloe. And I think partly from the fact that our two dads had both played for Ireland. And actually, when the Foleys moved to Killaloe, and I don't know when that was, I think it was 79, 80, something like that, they actually they moved into our house, lived on the top floor of our house when they were re-roofing their house, because our two dads knew each other. So I remember Foley, as a five-year-old kid, and we were friends from then on in, you know, but it was as much to do with their father as to do with anything else. And there was a new rugby club set up in Killaloe in 79, Ballina Killaloe, which is still going today, which is a very vibrant club. And so there was rugby. There was a bit of rugby. There was rugby in Ennis. Ennis is a proud club. But it wasn't common. Definitely not. Though we always had matches out here in Killaloe, but not. It wasn't all over Clare. Definitely not. Clare is mostly a hurling county. There's definitely football on the west side of it, but we played little or none, actually, in Killaloe.
Right. I didn't realise that you'd lived with Foley when you were kids. Pretty amazing that the two of you end up going on to play for Ireland.
Yeah, I mean, look, it was funny. We played hurling together all the way through. He's 2 years younger than me, but he was taller than I was. And it's funny, I'm looking at his son at the present moment in time. Tony he's a damn sight taller than I am now. I'd say he's taller than his own father at 15, but he's growing like a weed. So Anthony was this big, skinny kid. As a hurler, it was quite entertaining because it's very funny. People keep talking back about how great he was as a hurler. And actually, he grew into a very good hurler, and he really did. But there was about 2 or 3 years, it was as if there was a puppeteer playing with him because he was trying to grow into his body. And he did three things that were unbelievably magic, three things that were dreadful, and the rest kind of the norm. But he became a fantastic hurler. And strangely, it was his release, I think, from rugby up until he died. He couldn't think of anything better than bringing his kids down for hurling training, you know, down to Smith O'Brien's. And he did a couple of days a week, every week, irrespective of what was going on.
Go on, sorry, Nathan.
Keith, we've been talking throughout the Mount Rushmore about people who get on the Mount Rushmore and who miss out. And quite often GAA players are in maybe a more fortunate position because they wear the colours of the county week in, week out, and therefore it sort of sinks into your brain that they represent you. Whereas when you think of Anthony Foley, you think of the red of Munster more than the Clare colours. In terms of him being from Clare and him deserving to be on this Mount Rushmore, what did it mean, his Clareness to him and being part of that Munster side?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. One is, if we're being honest, GAA is, I know Neil Francis said that rugby was becoming the main Irish game, and that was always rubbish. You know, GAA is, and if you're in a football county, it's football, and if you're in a hurling county, it's hurling. And for us, it would have marked us up as being Claremen. We were always Claremen. We wanted to play hurling for Clare. That was the drive that we had when we were hurling. And there was a sense of that part about him. Now, Anthony was born in Limerick. He spent the first few years of his life in Limerick, but I would have said he identified as being a Clareman in a huge way. And yes, you're a Munster man, and yes, but I think GAA takes that supersedence in terms of county colours, because that's what you do. That's, you play for your county. That isn't something that runs for rugby. So I don't know that you get kind of too bogged down in that. For Anthony, he would have been a very, very proud Clare man. He loved hurling. He played hurling underage for Clare. He never had the body for hurling, really. He might have had a window for it, same as myself, actually. And, you know, I was fast, but I wasn't agile. And you suddenly learn that when you're 16 or 17, when people can spin on a sixpence and you're taking a sort of turning circle of an Arctic trawler. But, Foley, he knew where he was from. I think we were all proud of him for what he did, for A, playing for Ireland, which was pretty impressive, B, playing so many games for Munster, and I think bringing so many rural people around the province to follow, not just from Clare. It made it very comfortable to follow country guys, you know, and Munster is made up of a couple of big cities, but mostly country towns. And there's a link to everybody. So there was that level of, I would have said, every man supporter around it. And I think that came on the back of a lot of the players that played from the country. Look, we both went to the same school. We both went to St. Munchan's in Limerick. And that was a really good rugby school, but it was a rugby school that was built on principles of looking after the farmers from West Limerick. And latterly, in our time, it became a lot of the country folk from East Clare started going in. And if you look at it now, there's a huge amount from Clare going to St. Munchan's.
Were you guys boarders, or did you travel in and out every day?
I travelled in and out every day. Anthony boarded.
Right. And so that's like a half an hour commute every morning in and out of school.
Yeah, yeah. And look, I loved it. It was great. It was different. My brothers had gone there before me. It was very close to where we lived in Ardnacrusha. So when we lived in Ardnacrusha, it was very, very close. Look, it's just over the border. And for me then, I never even thought of going anywhere else. As my own three sons, there was no consideration of them going anywhere else. They're all in Munchan's as well.
I think the point you make about the awakening of a fan base, and how a fan base is kind of electrified by certain individuals. It's the same in some ways that Sean O'Brien opened up Leinster from beyond the enclave that it was in to a bit where, Shane Horgan, followed by Sean O'Brien, followed by Tadhg Furlong. And maybe in Munster you had that already in that there was more of a hodgepodge from the All Blacks team. But in the professional era, you can kind of point to people like Foley.
Yeah, I think it was a harder sell in Leinster. I think it's an easier sell in Munster. And there was always a great link with the fans from rugby. He was with Shannon, I was with Gary Owen. There was a great link with those fans at that stage anyway, back in the early 90s. I do think that was part of it. Like, we use Munster as the province. Leinster, for a lot of the time, pretty much was just Dublin. Now, they never said that, they never meant that, but that was just the way it was taken. That's why we ended up getting a huge amount of supporters from Kilkenny, Carlow even. They'd say that, you know, they were kind of Leinster fans, if that makes
Lunsters,
makes sense.
Oh yeah, it was a big thing.
The Lunsters, I have a friend in Dublin, I call him Eddie Lunster still. He's in my phone as that, and I think he takes it okay still. But it's coming back to haunt us a little with Leinster doing this so well.
Look, I've spoken like this before, but Leinster used to have banners up, D-Fortress, and it was like, all right, fair enough. If that's your marketing tool, fair enough. But you should be aware of the fact that you're creating Leinsters all around the county. And the reason I'm talking about this is because I think it's important to have people to hang that hat on. And I guess that's the case for Foley, is that he was a brilliant player, a totemic figure as a leader, but also kind of has a wider context in uniting something bigger, which I think speaks to Nathan's point about the county colours. It's like he makes it okay for people in all across the county of Clare to stick their Munster jersey on, to feel proud of it.
Oh, I think so. I absolutely think so. And he held aloft the European Cup, you know, just can't get away from that fact. So that's, it's one of those fantastic things. So, and I remember, I just, I still remember him as a Clare man. I don't. I think some might call him a Limerick man, but I would remember him in Clare jerseys. You see, and that's the other thing. If you've managed to play for your county and you have the colours on, you know exactly where you're from. You know.
So he did play as an underage, did he?
Oh, he did, yeah.
Right.
And we actually played. We played on an East Clare team first, and I played. That was in 1988. We actually got to the Munster final. We played before the Cork Waterford Munster final in '88, and he played in that. Definitely, we got beaten by East Waterford by a couple of points, which really hurt me. I played for Clare. There was a combined Clare team then, the first ever Nina Milk quadrangular tournament they had in 88, which we'll talk about that in a minute too. And I think Foley played in that the following year, the year after. Look, pure Clare.
We haven't had a selector, correct me if I'm wrong, Ger, as of yet, we haven't had a selector select themselves on Mount Rushmore. And Jamesy, I'm sure, is going to be too modest a little bit later to put himself up on the Clare Mount Rushmore, but he's unquestionably on the shortlist for his brilliance in 95 and man of the match in the final in 97. Can you talk a bit about Jamesy Keaton and the reverence he's held in within Clare and your memories of him growing up? Because I know, I think he played, what, was it under 16 together?
Yeah, we did. I mean, I look at Jamesy. Jamesy was from, Durop Airfield. They were a serious team. There were a lot of serious players in Clare at the time, and we looked on them with envy. From Killaloe, we weren't getting much of a run, and we weren't at that A level with Six Mile Bridge, Cranklow. So the first time I got to see Jamesy was playing for against Limerick. I was centre forward, he was wing forward, and Rory Murphy from Cranklow was the other wing forward. It's one of those great things that I can look back at it to this day. And I was a reasonable hurler in that I wasn't very big. I was getting big at that stage, and suddenly, I was able to break the ball very well. I was a good point scorer, good from frees. It was just like a different game playing beside him. There was just no comparison. So I was doing everything by huge amounts of effort. He was doing everything with no effort. And he had a flick in his wrists that I still can't do without breaking something. And, you know, it's interesting when you look back when you're 16 years of age and you're playing beside someone who just does something so beyond anything of your capability. It's almost daunting and frightening to see it. But he was just a standout in that team, and he became the standout from every single game that went afterwards. And if I go back to Foley just for 1 minute, we came back from the World Cup in 95 and I had a bad injury and I had surgery, and Foley had been back as well. But we went to that final. We got tickets. We were in the Nally stand in the final in 97, the All-Ireland. We were the first to leave the ground. We didn't stay for the trophy because we rushed back to Killaloe to go mad in Killaloe. You know, we wanted to be there for all the madness later on. But that was the dream for us. And we were looking at players that we'd played with. You know, there was a lot of guys in that team that we'd played with 6 or 7 years previously. And it was, you know, you still wanted to follow them everywhere. And Jamesy, for me, was the embodiment of that, because he had a winning mentality, and he had a sense of skills that was just, I think, different for an awful lot. And it was, I remember talking about O'Driscoll, that when O'Driscoll got the hat-trick in 2000, I remember saying with him on the team, you know, you weren't going to win every game, but nearly anything was possible. I have to say, I thought Jamesy was the same. That once he came along, there was a great team with him and a lot of really good players and a really good minor team that held together. A lot of those players held together. But with him on the field, you had an opportunity to win anything.
I think that when the ball's in his hand at the end of the 97 game, and it's on the line, you don't actually feel like it's on the line because it's in Jamesy's hands. You know he's going to score. There was an absolute certainty that with this game apparently finally balanced, the right man, it was fate that the right man had it, and there was no opportunity for that to go anywhere except, yeah, no problems. Straight over, we're going to win this game. Now, obviously, there's a late chance for John Lahey, but it was like, you just... like there was a certainty that I very rarely see in inter-county hurling or football where you just know that something is going to happen because somebody has reached such a high peak. And for me, that was the embodiment of the 97 team. I understand that Davy Fitz has criteria that see him in because he's a manager and we can talk about that. But if you were picking, Keith, give me three names, will you? Because...
I looked at a few. I think Foley, definitely. I think Jamesy. It's funny, I went for four names. Jamesy O'Connor. I went for Davy Fitz. And I think Davy is, you know, half part mad and half part passionate. And they spill over into each other. I'm entertained by him. I asked him once, I said, "Why are you so mad, Davy?" And he absolutely raged at me, explaining why he wasn't mad, thus proving the fact that he was. But he's so passionate and he's such a winner. So I think having won as a player and winning as and becoming a coach and driving the teams on that have had little success, I just think he's done incredibly well. And I think you have to look at Kieran Fallon because, and it's funny, I have no real love or interest in racing and horse racing. But I ended up buying a horse at one stage with a couple of friends years and years ago. And honestly, any time we stuck Kieran Fallon on it, he won. So I kind of liked him for that reason too, you know. And I think there are people who excel and succeed, and I think they need to get that. So for me, Foley, Jamesy, Kieran, and Davy.
Right.
That's me just throwing them out there.
Right,
you know?
So no Joe McNan, and obviously no Keith Wood on your own one. So this is a good list. That's all I'm going to say. This is a good list, and I don't envy the lads with their selections a little bit later on. Keith, we've got to go. We're out of time. Is there anything else just from a clear sporting perspective that you think is important that we kind of make notice of or pay attention to? Because there's a strain of madness to all of those lads that you're...
I think we're comfortably mad. I think that kind of fits the bill for all of us. If we think madness, I go back to one of our coach under 16 for Clare was Mike McNamara from Scariff. And it was funny, he was an avid rugby guy, but he was our coach for the hurling. And he used his fitness trainings were to be seen, to be believed. And none of us complained about it. So we were comfortably mad, I think, with that. There's other players and other people, and we're trying to think of different people that have come through for a while. You have Anthony Sister, of course, Rosie. You have Emer Considine, who played Gaelic football, Camogie for Clare, and obviously has played rugby. I think I'm happy enough to stick with those four.
That's not a bad list at all. Keith, great stuff this morning. Thanks a million for joining us.
Brilliant. Cheers, gents. All the best.
Right, it is time for Clare's Sporting Mount Rushmore.
You just need to put a health warning with it.
OTB AM's Mount Rushmore, live every weekday at 7:30 a.m. on OTB Sports Radio.
So you send out a fairly gentle tweet about trying to distill the 90s hurling team in Clare down to a couple of representatives, because obviously there are so many other brilliant sports representatives in Clare. And, your Twitter is very busy for the next 24 hours or so afterwards. Kieran Fallon's getting a lot of mentions. Anthony Foley's getting a lot of mentions. Keith Wood's getting a lot of mentions. And then the hurling debate starts. And really, where the hell does that stop? Because there are so many. Seanie McMahon, Jamesy, who's with us, Gerlach Nan, Davy, Dalo. That's just from that team. Then there's the team that wins in 2013 as well, and Davy's role and all that. So it is time for me to welcome our two guests this morning. We have Jamesy O'Connor, a hurling legend, and Cill O'Connor, who is a broadcasting legend, both from Clare. Nathan is still with us as well. Cill, I might start with you. It's a grave responsibility we have thrust upon yourself and Jamesy. I hope you're taking it seriously.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I was just thinking about this. There was a competition ran in the county there recently to pick the best club team in your club. And even that generated controversy, even in the smallest of clubs. I can just imagine what this will do across the county, trying to pick the top four sports people in the county over a long period of time. It'll be interesting.
Jamesy, when you were growing up, were there other sports that you were interested in apart from being from a hurling mad family?
Absolutely, Ger. I mean, listen, you were a child in the 1970s or 80s, two television land So, you know, you weren't blessed with options. But look at it. Yeah, we were out playing rugby when rugby season was on. We were jumping over barrels and hedges and walls when the show jumping was on in the RDS. Yeah, soccer, obviously the World Cup, the Olympics, they were all massive in our childhood. So, yeah, we watched everything, played everything. And yeah, life would have been a lot duller without sport, certainly through my childhood.
One of the things that's come up, and I kind of didn't realise Kieran Fallon was a real Claremont Sill. Is that something that the people of Clare have always known and have always kind of talked about?
I think maybe in latter years, Ger, maybe they would have copped on to that, because obviously he made his living most of the time in England. But the very fact that he's back now living in his native Clare, I think it has come to the fore an awful lot over the last period of time. So he'd be a serious contender up there with the top four, I would have believed.
All right. Nathan, from your perspective, you know, obviously we had Keith Wood on a little bit earlier on. He kind of gave us the broad tapestry of exactly what the issues are when it comes to trying to establish Clare's credentials and who's there. And all of a sudden you start to look at it and it's like, it's pretty good.
Oh, the second you mentioned Dalo, I was thinking, how can you have a Clare Mount Rushmore without Dalo being up there? He has that perfect streak of madness and genius. But then so do so many of them. And it is that balance of Clare, such a wonderful hurling county. How many do you fit in when you've Keith Wood, World Rugby Player of the Year, Axel Foley, captained Munster to their first ever Heineken Cup, and then Kieran Fallon, who won, what, three derbies, three Oaks, five or six Guineas, arguably the greatest flat jockey of his era. So if the three of them were to get in, you'd be left with one hurler. I can't imagine a Claremont Rushmore with just one hurler. But then it's Jamesy, Dalo, Lochnan, Davey.
Yeah, for a hurling,
I don't envy Sill.
For a hurling county as well. It's the James is our selector. Sill gets to make one change at the end, and then we come to some kind of consensus. James, where are you starting? What's safe territory to start? What's your safe space when it comes to this?
Yeah, well, I think, listen, rugby, part of this, Jarvis, is, you know, I think the recipients have to be obviously high profile, world class, you know, exceptional. And I think the first guy that certainly ticks that box, and that's Keith Wood. Listen, obviously, you know, 58 caps for Ireland, 10-year career, 15 tries. But when he broke onto the scene first, I mean, no hooker that I'd ever seen playing rugby had that same acceleration, that burst, that willingness to put his body on the line, you know, with no obviously. And, you know, he revolutionised the position, I think. And I suppose, listen, you know, that iconic Lions tour to South Africa in 1997, and this was the Living with Lions documentary, where, you know, we got to see behind the scenes, you know, what went on, and you got a sense of how highly he was regarded. And I mean, that was gripping stuff and had us all in our seats. And you know, he was obviously an integral and central part to that, along with, I suppose, Paul Wallace and Jeremy Davison, I think, were the other guys that started. Look, he was World Rugby Year 2001. You know, you look at the people that have won that list: Johnny Wilkinson, Dan Carter, Keir Reid, Rich Ma, Brian Sexton, obviously has won it. So, you know, for me, absolutely world class. You know, Keith Wood has to be on the list. And he played hurling for Clare as well, Ger. So, you know, he has to be there. Now, for me, he edges out. You know, obviously Axel, you know, we know what he did over in Cork, a massive and massively respected figure, you know, within the whole Munster province, and what an integral part and central part and plank he was, you know, when Munster again just brought us on what seemed like epic journey. Year after year after year, international Heineken Cup. And again, like Woody, he's a Killaloo man. He's from a, you know, I suppose a sporting family, a hurling family. You know, I spoke to him a few years back, and, you know, I remember him saying that he was looking forward to going out for a few pubs with the boys when he got home. And, you know, he's just, I suppose, the respect that he's held in within Munster tells you how important he was to them. And Martin was down the road at Clonera as well. You know, over 60 caps for Ireland, over 200 appearances from Munster. Obviously a great success as part of the Ireland team of that era. So, you know, those guys are all in the mix. But for me, you know, Wood was absolutely world class, and he's the first name. And I think hopefully a fairly safe picture to start with.
I think it is a safe pick, Nathan, isn't it?
I Yeah, listen, I think you go through the list of other players who won World Player of the Year, and also you go through the list of players who haven't won World Player of the Year. So to get to that level, and there's been a few videos doing the rounds over the last few weeks of Keith's particular skill set with the ball in hand and his kicking ability. For a hooker, what he was able to do with the ball was exceptional. And again, you can become complacent about things like this when we have Keith on the show on such a regular basis as to just how brilliant he was. And to make that impact from hooker and to be World Player of the Year and to do it on a worldwide stage, I think thoroughly deserving of his place.
So in terms of the clearness was the kind of the topic that we were talking a little bit earlier on when we had Keith on about Foley in particular being the embodiment of Munster and holding aloft in that cool Munster jersey with the Toyota logo, the Heineken Cup. I suppose we're talking about Clare's Mount Rushmore. How Clare do the rugby players feel? Nathan makes the point that you see the hurlers and the footballers in the county colours in the various counties around Ireland, and that has been kind of shooing them onto the mount in many ways. But I think sometimes we need to kind of think beyond that and think internationally.
Yeah, Ger, there's no question about it. When you come to a certain situation of any sports person in the county, you know, people might be not familiar or maybe not follow the sport that they're participating in. But when they reach the level that the likes of those players reach at Munster level, at Lions level, playing for Ireland and all that, that's when they generate huge interest within the county, no matter what their sporting abilities will be or what sport they participate in. So one of the things about that, and I have to say that you come into the world of rugby that we're talking about right now, and as James said, Marcus Horton just down the road, Axel Foley, you know, an absolute legend when it comes to rugby, and not alone here, but I think right across the world as well. There's no doubt about that. And I think when you talked there about the Keith Wood, you know, he's such a phenomenal player, and he was definitely on my list as one of the top four people that would have represented the county, without a doubt. And I think he's looked very much upon as being a man from Clare, as James was saying, down the road. Don't know him personally, but I know an awful lot of people who would be very close friends with him. So I'm delighted that Keith Wood would have made James's top four, because he's on mine as well.
All right, so there's a consensus there, Keith Wood. I think sometimes with players like that, again, you kind of forget that he bridges this era from the amateur to the professionalism and is part of injecting a level of professionalism that hadn't been there before in Irish rugby. So huge credit for that, and also for the game-changing abilities that you've talked about there as well, Jamesy. Before we get to hurling, what other sports are in the mix here, Jamesy, and who's next on your list?
Okay, next on the list is Kieran Fallon, native of Croisín, just out the road. But again, Ger, when you look at, when you talk about world class, I mean, this guy, again, ticks all the boxes. I mean, you know, you start with the classics, three derbies, you know, the John Magnus, I think, was once asked what determines the racehorse or whatever, and I think he said that the wooden plank or the finishing post at Epsom, and Fallon won the Derby three times, he won the Oaks four times, 5,000 guineas, 1,000 guineas, you got Ireland then, you know, the Irish Classic, two Irish Derbies, three Oaks, the St. Ledger, he was champion six times, he won the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe twice. He won the Breeders' Cup, he won the Arrington Million. You know, Ascot was on a couple of weeks ago. He won the Gold Cup, he won the St. James's Palace Stakes in Nassau. All the big races there. The Cardinal Eclipse, the King George, Locking, the Irish Champion Stakes. He won in Dubai, Hong Kong, France, Germany, Italy, Australia, the USA. And even the horses that he rode, you know, Yates, North Light, Ouija Board, Bosersham, Chris Kinn, Oath, Reams of Earth, Hurricane Run, Dylan Thomas win the Ark. He's ridden for Bally Doyle, obviously, and Aidan O'Brien. He's stable jockey for Henry Cecil, stable jockey for Sir Michael Stout. You know, and okay, there's maybe been controversy in his career, and he's maybe had his demons, but Ger, in terms of all that, no one could deny his horsemanship, his nerve, his bravery, his sense of timing. I suppose all the things that are required, you know, to be an elite jockey and to have the pressure to come those horses in those Group 1 races and, you know, the stakes that they're competing for. So, you know, it's a hard profession. I mean, to make 9 stone throughout your career is not easy. It's a tough life. And these guys are probably riding out 6-7 days a week, traveling all over the world. And, you know, when you talk about world class and the greatest jockeys of all time, I mean, okay, he mightn't be the greatest jockey, you know, but certainly he's in that conversation. you know, again, and again, it goes back, I think, Ger, to what we were saying about Keith and Axel and Marcus. You know, I don't think great athletes ever forget where they come from, or they don't ever, I think you always have that sense of place. And I think Woody certainly has it, and Axel had it, and I'm sure Marcus has it, and I think Fallon has it as well. And for me, he has said, you know, to make this list, you had to be exceptional. You had to be muscles if you compete on the international stage. And Fallon, no question, he ticks all those boxes. And he's not someone that people outside of Clare might, or even maybe people within Clare, you know, might have thought might have featured on this list. But for me, he absolutely has to be there.
Still?
2 out of 2, Ger. 2 out of 2, because Kieran Fallon is also on my list. And you know, an awful lot of people would be surprised that Kieran Fallon, I think, right now would be associated even with Clare. We've gone through all that. He's out now, Clare man. But I think the very fact that he probably spent the vast majority of not alone his career, but his life, I would imagine, across the water, would surprise people maybe that he is from Clare. He's an out and out Clare man. James has outlined his success, and it's a phenomenal success. 6-time champion jockey as well, and that famous Arlington Million also participated in that and won it on one occasion in the States as well. So I'm delighted that Kieran Fallon is on it, an out and out sportsman, and certainly in the top four, my top four in the county of Clare.
So this is obviously very difficult, right? But we've got to decide the relative merits of Kieran Fallon versus Anthony Foley versus other people as well. So are you both comfortable enough to have him ahead of Anthony Foley at this stage? Still, I might start with you. Are you comfortable that he edges? I don't have any rules. Do you have to have one rugby, one other sport, one blah, blah, blah? It's your mountain. You get to pick. So we're not stuck.
Look, Ger, I could list out 10 people just off the cuff outside of GA circles that are contenders for the list. It's not a case of one rugby player and then we have to change it. It's not that. It's just that I just believe that Kieran Fallon, in the sport that he has excelled in, and he has excelled in that, a 6-time champion jockey in Britain, I think is a huge achievement. It's not taking from anybody else. And there's a vast majority of people on the list here that I was looking at over the last couple of days. And I don't think he's taking from anybody. I think he's outstanding in his own field. And that's how he made the top four for me in Clare. Certainly not taking from anybody else.
OK, well, look, we might talk hurling at this point. Jamesy, you know, you were part of the team that makes the breakthrough. And it's very difficult because, like, for what it's worth, I don't know if you saw it earlier on, Keith Wood put you on his mountain. As somebody who embodied that team in 95 and 97. So notwithstanding that, right, and I'm not asking you to put yourself on the mountain because I know you wouldn't, but you can if you want, by the way. Feel free, I'll back you 100%. I've got your back. How do you pick?
There's no need, Ger, don't believe me, okay? I have no business anywhere near that mountain. Like, I suppose, you know, you look back at the history as a player and, you know, for my time, there were, you know, outstanding, you know, Clare players, and you know, putting Cullen from the '60s. You go back to Jimmy Smith. This really is maybe the most well known of those. I mean, three Hearty, three Ireland colleges in a stellar career with St Flannan's, when they were kind of starting to emerge as a force in the college scene. You know, played for Clare for I suppose the best part of 18 or 19 years. 6-4. Glimmering 53 championship, I think, is a record that still stands and would probably never be beaten. 8 Railway Cup medals at a time, I suppose, in the Chrissy Ring era, when I suppose behind the Munster Championship in the All Ireland, the Railway Cup was a massive prize, drawing massive crowds. And the regard, I think, with which he was held by his peers, you know, he was chosen, like, on the Munster team of the millennium, maybe the best ever team that, you know, players never won in All Ireland. And an absolute stalwart for Clare, and I suppose won 5 county championships with his native Rouen as well. So Smith was a legend, I suppose, before my time. And then you've got the team, I suppose, in the '70s, you know, with Sean Stack and, you know, Johnny Callan and obviously Ger, Seamus Durock, Johnny McMahon and you know, Colm Horan, and a lot of those guys, you know, won All-Stars and obviously came desperately close, you know, particularly I think in 78, and, you know, I was only 6, I wasn't at it, but, you know, people still talk about, you know, that day and you know, the 2-point defeat, to look at an exceptional, unbelievable star laden Cork team. So those guys have to be in the mix. And then I suppose, look, you go to my era, and you start for me, Brian Lohan, Sean McMahon. You know, if you're having conversations, Ger, about all time greats and greatest players ever played the position, I mean, Lohan is in the conversation at fullback, and Sean is in the conversation at centre back, and rightly so. And then outside of that, you know, you've Dalo, you know, captain of that side. An unbelievable character, an unbelievable captain, a phenomenal presence in the dressing room, a guy who went on to manage Clare, obviously managed Dublin, great success there. You know, and he's in the mix. Davies, but then again, you know, between the posts, manager in 2013. So yeah, this isn't going to be easy. And Gerry, you know, even just to digress, I mean, you know, you could draw a line, and people maybe don't know this, and I know this has come up in some of the other ones, but you could draw a line down the middle of County Clare, and almost everything west of Ennis is football country. And you know, you go back to West Clare, and you know, Kilkee and Kilrush, and you know, and up to North Clare, up to Listonvarna, whatever, to the Western Seaboard, you know, Quilty, and there is no hurling played back there. You know, football is the game, and that's the reality. And then I suppose the east of the county, and you know, the middle of the county, that's where the hurling is played, and they're where the traditional hurling strongholds are. So, yeah. It's not going to be easy to narrow this down. This is no easy task by any stretch of the imagination.
James, in terms of the 2013 team, are any of those players, probably because they're still playing, maybe they haven't yet, we haven't got to the point where they're finished, but like, are any of them in the mix? Is Tony Kelly in the mix?
To be honest with you, I don't think they are, because they're currently playing. I mean, you know, you look at that team, and obviously Tony was young player of the year, and himself and Colm Galvin. I mean, the career that those guys had, David McInerney, I suppose, to throw into that as well, and I'm leaving out others. But to do what they did, I mean, they were exceptional, obviously, as minors. They carried that on and won the 3-21s. And obviously then, you know, we thought in 2013, this is going to be, you know, we're going to be competing in the Ireland semi-finals and Ireland finals and winning Munster, hopefully for the foreseeable future. And it just didn't happen for whatever reason, I suppose. And look at, obviously Kilkenny were still a force and tip of that great team, and you know, Brendan Maher, Pádraig Maher, Callanan, you know, Bonner, you keep going. You know, those players were in that era as well. So did they feature for me? I mean, I look back at that team, and obviously Tony and the guys I mentioned, Conrad for me was an absolutely class player, probably underrated, and maybe we didn't see the best of him either, maybe some of the style that we played during that time. Brendan Bugler was a classist for them, Pat Donnellan a great captain, but and maybe I'm showing my bias, and maybe this is age bias, but no, that they I couldn't include those guys ahead of my contemporaries, my peers, in terms of maybe the longevity of their careers, the success, and maybe what they did, maybe even at club level. So, but honest about it, Ger, no, you know, I wouldn't include them ahead of some of the names that I mentioned earlier.
Look, I think that's fair enough. And again, it goes back to the theme of the show today, is the team who does it first, I think, is the one that everybody else follows on from, and they stand on the shoulders of giants. Still, you know, you've been covering these games, you've been at them all, you've commentated on them all, you know them all, you've seen them in club games. What's your take on how the hurling shakes down?
Well, Gerry, you know, James, you there mentioned the likes of Jimmy Smith. I grew up, I got an interest in the GA back in the 60s when I was a young whippersnapper at the time. And I spent a lot of time listening to stories about the likes of Jimmy Smith, the likes of Matt Nugent, the likes of great players like that, from listening to my father telling stories. Then I came along to the 70s. And in the mid-70s, of course, the success of the Clare team of the 70s is without doubt for me one of the real highlights. And I'll tell you why. When you come across a county like Clare, like many other counties across the country, success is not that plentiful. But when it comes, it's looked upon as not alone a big achievement, which is fantastic, but it also becomes a huge occasion as well. It's a massive occasion. And I remember back in the 70s when Clare qualified for three league finals in particular. In 76, it was a drawn game and they got a bit of a trimming in the replay. And then in 77 and 78, when they won two league titles in a row. That was a massive occasion for Clare as a hurling county, as a county right across the board. I mean, you have 30,000 people at a homecoming in the mid mid-70s for a National League title. It'll just give you some idea of what the success meant to the county of Clare. And those players are still, almost to this day, you could almost name those 15 players straight off the cuff for the success that they brought to the county of that. And I remember my very first time in Turles in the early 70s. It was such an occasion to go to Turles. You know, Marty often talked about the...
Oh, just lost still there, I think.
Mm.
That's unfortunate. We were getting to the bit where we were about to get to the decision.
What did Marty say?
I don't know what he often said.
I think Clare actually has turned out to be one of the most fascinating counties, because as we've gone around the country, there's a clear pride of place and parochialism towards people from every county, that anything that ever happened, it didn't matter. He's from here, so we want him on our Mount Rushmore. Whereas Clare is different. You look at two of their most iconic figures, Ger Lochnan and Davy Fitzgerald, and both of them are quite divisive within their own county. Are either of them totally beloved by everybody, or would you meet a good gang of people who would go, nah, not for me? There's something, maybe it is that touch of madness that is within Clare, that for some reason, like, both of those could well be on this Mount Rushmore.
Well, before we go any further here, we want to bring in Irish Examiner columnist Kieran Shannon, who's a resident of Ballyea in County Clare, with this morning's last pitch after he picked his local Mount Rushmore, Tony Kelly, Tony Griffin, Gary Brennan and Micheál O'Hare. He brought us his one pick that he says has to be on Clare's Mount Rushmore. Have a look at this.
So for that last spot, there's a few people I think we have to consider. We mentioned Axel Foley. I think Rosie Foley is worthy of mention, who was one of the first generation of international rugby players and helped create a tradition and then a bit of a winning tradition and has swam the English Channel. Rosie's worth a mention, I think, along with Seamus Power. Look, is someone who, when I came to the county 15 years ago, was just routinely winning national cross-country championships. I remember thinking at the time that whoever was the 14th or 15th highest profile player on the Clare team at the time, when they were about third to fifth in the country in the mid-90s, getting All-Ireland quarter-finals, semi-finals, still had a higher profile than Seamus Power. I remember thinking it was a scandal, because here is a guy who won multiple national cross-country championships, competed for Ireland a dozen times in the international cross-country championships, won a bronze medal in the European Championships. So, like, we all can run. Jamesy there is a great runner as well, but not quite a Seamus Power. And yet he was the guy who finished front of the line 9 times in the national cross-country championships. But look, when it comes to who has to be there, along with Lochnan, probably ahead of Lochnan, it has to be Michael Cusack. There's a reason why the county grounds are called what they are, Cusack Park. There's a reason why there's a statue in front of Cusack Park with Michael Cusack, because was he the best hurler? Well, he was the first hurler. And his achievement was to make sure there was a second hurler. And there's various, from Christy Ringan Cork and DJ made the one in Kilkenny. There would be nobody on any county's Mount Rushmore if it wasn't for Michael Cusack. And for that reason, you know, some statues aren't looking very good at this moment in time in history, but Michael Cusack's looks all the more. I would say that there should be a statue of Lochnan outside Cusack Park, but there should be Cusack beside Lochnan on the Clare Mount Rushmore. On these sort of things, we maybe don't give enough respect to the 19th century or early 20th century, but if you think of the Mount Rushmore in the States, it's guys going back to the 19th century. Michael Cusack made the GAA. He literally made the GAA. You can say whatever about him else, but it took a man with a bit of madness, maybe a bit like Lochnan. Lochnan might have channeled that spirit, but it was a man who remembered his boyhood in Clare. It wasn't anywhere else. He remembered his childhood in Carron, and he said, this game is dying. That great game I played as a kid, and the gift he's given everybody, and he gave it to the whole country, but he particularly gave it to Clare. And for that reason, Michael Cusack, I think, joined your Mount Rushmore. It's a case of who's after that.
Right, compelling argument there from Kieran Shannon. The cat is amongst the pigeons, James O'Connor. Who are you picking third?
Yeah, third, I'm going with Brian Lohinger. again, listen, like this was an almost impossible call to make because the regard I have for you know Shawnee and you know Fitzy and Dalo and all the other players in that team, but look, I made my championship debut with him in 1993. He was such an important figure in our dressing room, the iconic red helmet, and nobody seemed to galvanise the crowd more than Lohan. I mean, I remember we played Tip in the league game in I don't know, I think it might have been early 97 or whatever, and he blew one of the Tip players away with a shoulder or whatever and won this ball he'd no right to win, and then just opened the shoulders and drove it, and the roof nearly came off the far stand over in Cusack Park, and he just seemed to be, I suppose, the one clear player above all else that the clear supporters revered. And look, at four All-Stars, you know, obviously the two All-Irelands and three Munster titles, one county championship, put with Tones in his back, I suppose, and was instrumental in them getting to an All-Ireland club final. They won the Munster club. And for me, yeah, you had to pick maybe somebody from that era, and for me, I'm going with Brian Lohan.
Okay, does that mean number four is going to be a shootout between the rest of that team, or are you leaning towards putting somebody from the west of the county on instead?
Yeah, but again, you know, Kieran obviously mentioned Seamus Power. I mean, you know, nine in Ireland cross country titles, whatever. Willie Keane from Kilkee, Ger Keane, the footballer that people might be familiar with. Willie Keane was in the, I rang Seamus Hayes during the week, whatever, just to get a bit of background, and he won something like 56 All-Ireland titles. There was that split, Ger, and I don't know the history behind it, between the NSEA and BLE back in the 70s, whenever it happened, and he stayed maybe with the NSEA and or NSEA Lightly's roots in St. John's in Kilkee, whatever. But he was apparently an awesome, unbelievable athlete. Tim Smith, that the Fair Green in Ennis is named after, is Tim Smith Part, won the World Cross Country title in 1931. He's originally a native of Fecal or whatever. Won, I think, 10 All-Ireland Cross Country Championships, represented Ireland internationally. And then obviously you've got Seamus Power as well. Sonny Murphy, I think, ran the Olympics in 1932 in Los Angeles. Pat MacDonald was a native of Doombeg. He went to America and won a gold medal in the shot put in Stockholm in 1912 and won another gold, I think, in 1920. You know, so these guys are all in the mix as well. Ger, it comes down to, the next one for me is between two, right? I could acknowledge, and growing up, obviously, you know, I played football as well and played football in Flannans, played minor football for Clare for about 15 minutes into their lives, how bad I was and got me off. But Noel Roach, When the compromise rules was been played in the 1980s, and I'm sure you watched as well or whatever, Noel Roach was playing, and along with us, look at Spike Fagan, and there was maybe one or two others that were outside of the traditional, you know, superpowers, the Kerrys, the Dublins, and so on, and that guy played compromise rules for Ireland on four consecutive occasions, like 84, 86, 87, and 1990, and he was just one of those quiet, unfussy players that obviously the managers at all sides, Kevin Heffernan, etc., had massive regard and respect for, because they wouldn't have picked him otherwise. And look, he gave a decade of service plus with Clare, and finally got his reward in 1992. He was cornerback in that team that, you know, defeated Kerry in the Munster Championship and finally brought back football silverware to Clare. So Noel Roach is definitely in the mix, ahead of guys like Seamus Clancy and Francis McInerney from that team. I mean, Gary Brennan is a teacher with me in Flannans, and Gary, you know, has been a phenomenal servant of Clare football, you know, over the last 10 years as well or whatever. But, Ger, I couldn't conceive around much more of Clare without Lognan being on it. And I've agonised over this, and I'm going to, let you know, throw it back on Phil, and Phil can as a dirty job of unwriting or you know my wrongs, whatever perceived wrongs. But, and I know I may annoy, you know, the football side of the county by doing this, but for me, like, Lognan was just, you know, exceptional. And I don't know if anybody could have got out of that team what he did, and what he had to do, you know, to convince us to obviously, number one, get us physically ready, get the speed of our hurling up to what was required to compete with the Offalys and the Limericks and the Kilkennys and the Tips and so on. But more than anything else, I think to change the mindset and convince us and transmit that belief to us that it could be done. And this is a guy who gave his heart and soul for Clare, suffered agonising, heartbreaking defeats in five Munster finals. And it was, you know, obviously a mission for him, you know, to finally get Clare over the line, and he managed to do that. And then when we won that Munster title, he wasn't prepared to settle for it. and a lot of other people would have been and been heroes forevermore. But you know, you have to give him credit for getting us back to earth and driving on and going on to achieve the success that we did. So for me, it's Loughnane to complete the four ahead of Noel Roach. And hopefully, I think, you know, when you look at Lone and Loughnane, I mean, I think you, you know, you have exceptional there, along with Kieran Fallon and Keith Wood.
Yeah,
and as I said, Sil now has to go and fix it.
You do. But before, Sil, before we ask you to make the edit, will you talk to us a little bit about football and the 92, the impact that that Munster title had on the people, particularly in the west of the county?
Well, I remember going... You know, John Mahon obviously took over, I think, in 91. I played minor football for Clare Gerry in 89. And look, it wasn't in a good space. And I was underage in 1990 and didn't go for trials, had no interest and didn't really want anything to do with it, to be honest with it, because that had been my experience. That, you know, we got to the Ireland minor final in 89. It was Mike Mack was involved and it was, you know, really professional and well-run and organised. And I played minor football for Clare because on the back of... But on a Flannan's team that won the Munster B colleges, I was playing cornerback. And I didn't train with that team once. I went down to the dressing room to play the first round of the championship against Waterford, was part of an extended panel, and then the team was called out and I was named corner forward. And I was, you know, how did this happen? What the hell is kind of going on here? You know, you can't... I had no business being anywhere near that team. I wasn't good enough. And... You know, Mahon took over as in 91. Noel Walsh obviously got him on board. And I went to see Clare playing Kerry in Ennis in the Munster Championship in 1991. And they played phenomenally. And there was a guy called Mark Burke playing corner forward who was arguably the best player on the field. He was exceptional that day. And he subsequently tore his cruciate, I think, and you know, missed out on the whole 92 thing. But the seeds were sown for that in 91. And I went to the Munster final in 92, reckoning that, look, if they could have ran Kerry as closely the previous year, they had a chance. And I remember there were actually as many, I'd say, East Clare people there. You know, I remember going in with my brother Christy, Shawnee, I think, was with us. I remember meeting Liam Doyle, Mousy Mack, who was sub-goalie in our panel in 97, behind the goal. And late in the second half, we were saying to ourselves, this is actually going to happen. They're actually going to win this. And it was phenomenal because this was before... The hurlers were in the doldrums at that stage. And obviously, it meant everything to the people of West Clare, you know, where football is king and that's their game, full stop. And it was phenomenal and arguably gave a kick in the backside to the hurlers. And look at it, the footballers and the training sessions and how hard they were working and how hard Mahon was running them were legendary. But that was maybe a wake-up call that, look at this, could be done, but look at, not without effort and not without putting your shoulder to the wheel, and maybe that had an impact on the players and maybe an impact on Loughnane and the subsequent hurling people as well.
I'm sure it did. Sil, will you make the case for the footballers for us?
I certainly will, because Jamesy has covered 92. The other thing you talk about in Clare, when people talk about Clare, they talk about the divide between, you know, west of Clare is football and east of that is the hurling section. In 92, when Clare won the All-Ireland or the Munster football title on that occasion, they toured East Clare with the cup for many, many weeks after that and came to our own club in Six Mile Bridge as well. So it'll just show you it was a county success, as we keep talking about the county success. That's what it was. Huge occasion, and for many, many people, Ger, that was their first visit to Croke Park for the All-Ireland football semi-final against Dublin on that particular day. And we won't talk about the disallowed goal on that occasion that proved to be crucial at the end of the day. And the other big thing about it is, if Clare were in an All-Ireland final in the morning and in Croke Park, does a certainty that the Artane band would play My Lovely Rose of Clare. On that particular occasion in 92, because of its association to West Clare, Percy French in his travels many, many years ago wrote a song about the West Clare Railway. Let's just say it would break down here. He wrote a song about that. And that's the song that was played in Croke Park in 1992 when the Clare footballers played in that All-Ireland football semi-final against Dublin. A massive occasion for Clare as a county. And as Jamesy said, it set us up nicely for 95 as well. Phenomenal success, some great players. And even to this day, there's some fantastic players. And, you know, very few people have more admiration for in football circles at the moment than the Trojan work on the field of Gary Brennan and the Trojan work off the field of Colm Collins as manager.
So, just on that, Ger, just, you know, two of my club mates were on that 92 team. James Hanahan was in goals, and Kieran O'Neill, who played hurling for Clare as well, you know, was wing back. Seamus Clancy, obviously, and Colm Clancy, letter those around the field in an intermediate final for Corrifin, hurling final in I think 1991. Joe Considine was from Coura Clare. Joe played hurling in Flannans. It was the first time he'd ever picked up a hurley, but he played underage for us because he was friendly with Christy and Ben Conroy and a few of the other lads from Dura Bearfield and transferred to us in as an isolated player and was an integral part of our All-Ireland winning club team in 1999. So there is that dual player aspect as well, and hurling and football been intertwined to an extent.
Yeah, I'm sure, and no doubt that you're right about the inspiration and the kick up the ass that it gave as well. Still, just to recap the way this works for anybody who's joining us now, it's Jamesy makes his four. We've had a case made for Michael Cusick by Kieran Shannon. Jamesy's four are Keith Wood, Kieran Fallon, Brian Lohan, and Gerlach Nan, and the case made by Kieran Shannon for Michael Cusick was fairly strong. That's his four. You get to edit that. You get to fix that. You get to make one change.
Okay.
You don't have to.
We're going with a two apiece with Kieran Fallon and Keith Wood. I come on to my third choice. We're talking about hurling and the mark it has left. I always talk about 77. I always talk about 95. I always talk about fantastic players. And there's one of them there right alongside us in Jamesy himself and all the players associated with that. But I think the one person for me that has not alone played a huge part in Clare hurling, but has reshaped it as well for many, many years, Clare's first all-star in the hurling field. And I have to go with Gerlach Nan as my third choice in this group of Rushmore four. And my final choice would have to go to a man, if he didn't decide that he was going to do something to represent the country forever and a day. And I think his vision from a small house in Carron back in 1884 at that very first meeting in Hayes' Hotel in Turles, I think we wouldn't be talking about championship draws, league draws or anything else without the vision, I think, of Michael Cusick. I remember doing a sketch on him a number of years ago, and I think the mark that he has left as a Clareman on the country and on many, many places around the world, I think the mark that Michael Cusick has left on the country as a whole cannot, for me, go without a serious mention. So right there, almost at the top of my list, I'd have to say would be Michael Cusick.
Does he not already have a statue? Is that not good enough for him?
There's a lot of people have statues. A lot of people are looking for statues. But I think Michael Cusick, I think, it's just he just started. He got a vision. Just remember the times he set that up, 136 years ago. The communication lines, just got a group of people together and decided that this organisation had merit, and look what it turned out to be.
Still, I don't know if you still do post-match interviews, if you're going to be down next time with Lohan after Clare winning All-Ireland, and there's a massive controversy when Clare FM's interviewer is blanked by the All-Ireland winning manager because you didn't stick him. You took him off. Worse than you didn't put him on, you took him off Mount Rushmore.
Listen to me, we usedn't call him Brian Lohan at all. We used to call him the fullback with the red helmet. And he always will be that, an absolute, like Jamesy and like many other players, a legend of the game. But take my word on it, Ger, Brian Lohan would have serious admiration for Michael Cusick as well.
OK, the final four, and this is it now. We can't go back on this. It's Keith Woods, Kieran Fallon, Gerlach Nan and Michael Cusick. Jamesy, I felt like your team should have had two on it. The Michael Cusick thing has kind of put a wrench in it. Are you happy with that?
Listen, Jeremy, I haven't read The Hurlers, the book, but a friend of mine has said it's unbelievable, I suppose, in terms of just understanding the times that they lived in, and obviously the vision that Cusick had and those people had. And as Phil said, look, the reality is that there mightn't be a game if these guys hadn't rescued it and did what they did in terms of rules and reviving it and so on. And apparently, like, hurling was on the verge of extinction. It wasn't being played, etc., etc., etc. And as I said, I'm looking forward to reading that book, Paul Rouse's book. But I don't think you can probably have any arguments about Cusick and the role he played. I think the four people we picture, I think, tick that box. And yeah, Brian Lohan could have been on it, and Sean McMahon could have been on it, and Noel Roach could have been on it, and I don't think that you could argue with their inclusion either. But I'm happy that Michael Cusick deserves his place there. He's someone, to be honest about it, that maybe wouldn't have entered you know, my thought process initially, but like, you know, when you think of the case that Kieran made and that Silas backed up, it's very, very hard to look beyond him.
It absolutely is. I presume this has gone on the Cliffs of Moher. Is that the only place for this?
Yeah, Cliffs of Moher would be, you'd find a spot there. Yeah, good luck with it though.
We'll get planning if we ask the right people. Is there anywhere else in Clare where it should be situated?
The statue of Michael Cusick?
No, the Mount Rushmore that we're going to chisel into some mountain in Clare somewhere.
That's interesting. Maybe Mount Callan, maybe on the way out to West Clare, might be a place to have a go at it, Ger. But I go over the cliffs.
Fair enough.
Ger, if you're ever in Clare, Ger, Mullagh Moor is a great walk on the burn. It's and it actually looks out on the house that they filmed Father Ted in. So maybe up there might be a fitting place for it.
12 o'clock hills, Abbey Hill. I'm being told to mention here.
Yes, just 12 o'clock hills. Just 5 minutes from me over the road, Joe. It would be more than welcome there, let me tell you.
This is just turned into an ad for the Wild Atlantic Way. And sure, you know, it's a community service.
People right here, Castle.
At this stage. Lads, it's been great. To the O'Connors, no relation. Lads, it's been brilliant spending some time in your company. And thanks very much for the hard work of whittling that down to a brilliant four. That is Clare's Mount Rushmore.
Thanks very much.
Cheers, Joe.
OTB AM's Mount Rushmore.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.